Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute, on air and online, this is Intersection.
Hello and welcome to Intersection, where people and ideas meet online and on KBIA. I'm Ryan Femuliner. Missouri lawmakers returned to the Capitol last week to kick off the 2014 legislative session, and while it's still early in the year, a number of lawmakers have hinted at what's to come. In his opening remarks, House Speaker Tim Jones highlighted medical malpractice reform, so-called right-to-work legislation, and income tax cuts as part of his agenda. Meanwhile, Governor Nixon closed out last year with a call to expand Medicaid coverage for low-income residents this year. Other issues that failed in last year's session, such as highway funding, ethics reform, and bond financing for construction and repair of public facilities, could also make a return this year. Today on Intersection, we'll talk to several state lawmakers and preview the 2014 legislative session. Joining me in studio, Chris Kelly is a Democratic representative for the state's 45th House District in Boone County. Representative Kelly, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here.
Caleb Browden is a Republican House member representing the state's 44th District in Boone and Randolph Counties. Representative Browden, thanks for being here.
Thanks, sir.
And Republican House Speaker Tim Jones represents the state's 110th District, serving St. Louis and Franklin Counties. He was first elected as the Speaker of the House in September of 2012. Speaker Jones, welcome to Intersection.
Thanks for having me.
And we'd love to hear from you and our audience as well. What do you think should be at the top of the agenda this legislative session? Let us know by giving us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet us at intersectkbia. To start, maybe just let's talk a little about the dynamics of the legislature this year. Last year, Republicans had a veto-proof majority both in the House and Senate. This year, we're just shy of that in the House, right? One vote short in the House of being a veto-proof majority for Republicans. So I guess, Speaker Jones, how do you think that's going to affect what kind of bills we're going to be seeing and discussing this year?
Well, during session, I don't know that it will affect things too dramatically. Our governor did select one of our Republican representatives right before the end of the year to serve on a board. That representative did resign, and so we are at 108 representatives right now. We have four vacancies, actually, in the General Assembly right now, one senator and three representatives. I believe the governor may now be thinking about calling special elections for all of those sometime in the near future, which would then make the discussion irrelevant when we hit the veto session in September, if that occurs.
Mm-hmm. Representative Kelly, what do you think about this, the dynamics here?
Yeah, it's interesting because part of our job is to have a rational respect for what the voters do. I don't like it, but the voters chose to elect two-thirds Republicans to the General Assembly. And at the same time, they elect the Democratic governor, and you've got to try to get our job done for the state and show appropriate respect for what those folks wanted. So that's a legitimate, important thing for us to do, and that's hard when you have that kind of a split.
Sure, sure. Well, to just jump right in here on some of the issues, one of the big ones that I mentioned in the intro and is on pretty much everyone's mind are tax cuts, what may happen this year. Again, last year there was a vote to cut income taxes. It was passed by the House and the Senate, but then Governor Nixon vetoed it. Many of you will probably remember that then that veto in the veto session also the override effort failed as well. And so what's going to be different this year? What might we see this year on income tax?
Well, I think Representative T.J. Berry, who was sort of at the front of the charge on that issue last year, either has filed or is about to file his version of a proposed tax cut bill this year. And, you know, my number one job priority this year is jobs. And I believe there's a number of different proposals on how to create an environment in our state that will attract jobs. I think an income tax reduction is part of that. I think a bonding proposal is part of that. I think discussing the worker freedom issue is part of that. I think discussing our litigation climate is part of that. So all that is part and parcel of the discussion. But Representative T.J. Berry has refiled a specific proposal for reducing taxes on a good chunk of Missourians. Others will be filed as well in both the House and the Senate.
Right. And those initials, that initial file, it seems like it's going to be much smaller than last year's proposal. The proposal last year, some estimates had it as much of an $800 million a year impact. This one, from what I've been reading so far, Representative Berry's talking about $80 to $120 million, something in that range, much smaller. What's the view on that? Because some Republicans are going to want more than that still.
Right? That's correct. I think Representative Berry took into consideration all of the different arguments that were levied against the proposal and said, okay, who is our major focus group here for reducing taxes that will stimulate jobs the most? And I think he came up with what we usually come up with, small business owners. Small business owners make up the backbone of every economy in every state. They employ the majority of people in America. They pay the most the highest burden on taxation. So I think that's where his bill is targeted. That's not to say that other proposals do not have merit. I believe that's where his aim is this year.
Representative Rada, what do you think about this?
Well, and Representative Berry's a very pragmatic guy. So I think he took the discussion that we had during regular session and the heightened discussion during veto session and looked at it from a perspective of, okay, if we want to get this done, if we believe and we do that this is a part of our job creation strategy in Missouri, what can we do, number one, to tailor it, focus it, you know, pinpoint it a little bit, but also maybe to get some other folks behind it. You know, obviously the discussion that we had around 253 was a pretty polarizing one. I think we'd all admit that. And so I think it'll give us an opportunity this year, since we're doing this in regular session and the spotlight's on it early. I think it gives us a chance to have a better dialogue about it. And I would hope to see, and I think you will see, a broader coalition of support behind this if we can get it honed in the right place.
Sure. And where are you on it? I mean, again, there's some division between whether it's going to be a broad-based proposal or something more targeted. Which do you prefer, I guess?
I really like the idea of – and part of this goes back to, I think, what we may have some understanding of what the governor would be open to, really focusing it at small business owners. You know, like the speaker said, that, you know, there's not a lot of debate that those folks are the backbone of our economy, of our state. And frankly, they've suffered probably more than just about anybody throughout the 2008 to 2012 cycle of time. And so if we can do something to ease their burden, give them a little bit more certainty, give them a little bit more stability in what they're doing, man, I think that's a win for everybody.
What about you, Speaker Jones? Where do you play, again, on that idea of either a broad-based plan or targeted, and I guess the magnitude of the cuts as well? Where are you on that spectrum?
Well, as the speaker of a caucus of 108 members with a total house of, I guess we have 160 right now, my job is to allow everyone to have as broad of a debate as we can. And then as we move through session, bills become tailored to their final product. And I think in light of the very disappointing jobs numbers that we saw come out last Friday, you know, we're now going into the sixth year where President Obama and Jay Nixon have been the highest executives in our nation and in our state respectively. And we see very disappointing jobs numbers. Some believe the actual unemployment rate is well over 10% because a huge number of people have given up and left the workforce. So I have to look around the country at the states that are succeeding, because out of the 50 states, there are several dozen that are doing quite well. And what I see are states that are reducing tax burdens. They do have worker freedom in place, you know, the right to work debate. They do have good, fair litigation systems. So having the tax reduction debate is vital to creating a climate in our state for jobs, creation, and growth.
We'll take a moment to remind our audience that this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Famuliner, and today we're talking to some state lawmakers as we preview the 2014 Missouri legislative session. Joining me in studio, Chris Kelly is a Democratic representative for the state's 45th House District in Boone County. Caleb Browden is a Republican House member representing the state's 44th District in Boone and Randolph counties. And Republican House Speaker Tim Jones represents the state's 110th District, serving St. Louis and Franklin counties. He was first elected as Speaker of the House in September 2012. And we'd love to hear from you and our audience as well. Should legislators cut taxes this year? Let us know what you think by giving us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet us at intersectkbia. Representative Kelly, what are your thoughts on tax cut proposals, and will Democrats actually support something this year?
I think things may be right to make some progress in the area of tax cuts. We've got some things that we could do that would, by being more efficient with our government, produce more revenue. There's a tax amnesty program. There's a tobacco settlement program. And there's the possibility of internet sales tax. So there's a number of ways that we could get the money to do a reasonable income tax cut. And if you're going to do that, I think Caleb and the Speaker are correct when they pick their targeted group. Small business people makes a lot of sense to pick them as your target group. But I don't think progress here is at all out of the question.
Right. 'Cause last year it was Republicans were trying to do this basically on their own when it came down to it, as far as the House Bill 253.
Yeah, and part of the problem there is House Bill 253 had within it it was very, very badly put together. It was two things. One, it was a philosophical concept, cut taxes. But also, from a drafting point of view, it had a lot of really serious mistakes in it.
The other place that this conversation usually goes is that income taxes could come at the expense of education funding. What do you have to say to that?
That's what we're talking about here. It's very possible, if we pick our sources of where the revenue comes from, to do something where you can cut taxes without cutting into education.
Yeah, and so how does that work, just specifically choosing areas?
Well, for instance, all of us have supported a concept called amnesty, which is a way – it's too complex to get into, but it would produce about $50 million in 1 year. Enacting the master tobacco settlement would produce about $50 million a year for quite a few years. So if you did those two things, you'd have – the $100 million, for example, that you could use in the first year to reach some of Tim's targeted group of the small business people. Right. Those are just two examples.
And it's also, I think, important to note that I think the consensus revenue numbers that we're looking at for this coming year, I mean, we're going to be spending $500-700 million more than we did last year. It's been a good year for us. I mean, growth we had projected at, I think, 4%. It was up over 10%. And so I think there's the potential, frankly, that you could cut taxes and also provide a huge boost in education funding. I think that it's not out of the question, like some folks wanted to make it last year, that you couldn't do both of those things at the same time. And I think this year provides a real, true opportunity to possibly do that. And that's exciting.
Yeah, Representative Rowden's exactly right. These are not mutually exclusive types of dynamics. The state budget has grown almost every year I've been in office, over 7 years now. We did have that period of time when we had the worst recession in most of our lifetimes. But even during those times, the Missouri House held the line on education funding. We have not cut education funding any year that I've been in an office. And in fact, last year, we added $67 million to our K-12 system, which was the largest single increase in our state's history. So our budget is now approaching $25 billion. And I think when you reduce taxes, which to me is a barrier to growth, you actually grow your economy, you grow your budget, you have more money for education. So Representative Rick Stream, who's our House Budget Chairman, has a long history of working with school districts. He actually served on a school board. His priority is going to be education. It always has been. Yeah. So I don't see those things as mutually exclusive.
Sure. Another issue that we've been talking about for a long time in the state legislature, but nothing happened last year either, is tax credit reform as well. Kind of still talking about the money that's available, moving pots around. What could happen? Can something happen this session?
Me?
Yeah, sure. Why not you?
When you talk about tax credits generically, everybody wants to cut them. When you talk about specific tax credits themselves, they have huge, big bodies of supporters because many of them do a lot of good. And so that's always the battle. As long as you can keep the conversation on tax credits generally, it's easier to make that sell. Here's the problem. We spend maybe $600 million a year on them. And if you just banter that number around, you can make it sound like you can save $600 million. You can't. If you save $200 million, you'd be being wildly successful in the tax credit area. So it's important not to overpromise what you could get from reform. Reform, you know, is cutting somebody else's stuff.
Right.
That's the definition of reform.
Well, how do you think, again, it's been tried for the last few years, actually, and nothing. What would it take for this to be successful? What kind of approach might actually work to have some reform in certain areas?
You've got to break them into pieces. Almost nobody in the General Assembly likes the idea of cutting the tax credit for domestic shelters. However, lots of people in the General Assembly would talk about, is there a way that we could bring the low-income housing tax credit, spend less money in that? And when I say less money, there's a range of – some people might want to cut it all out. Some people wouldn't want to touch it. But we're all somewhere on that spectrum, and there's probably a place there where we could save some money in that area. And I've been a big supporter of that. But there's some things we could do. Same thing with the historics. Those are two of the biggest. And they're spectrums.
Right. Speaker Jones, do you expect this to come up this session?
Oh, absolutely. And I think with the three people here, you're going to see a lot of bipartisan agreement between the three of us as to I think all three of us generally believe that tax credits, when employed the right way for certain specific types of projects, are beneficial to our state. However, I think all three of us agree we're okay with reforms in those areas. And in fact, all three of us, I believe, voted for the reform bill that we moved out of the House last year. And again, to put this in context, I've mentioned we have a state budget that's nearly $25 billion. Out of that $25 billion, we reached a peak last year in tax credit redemption of around $600 million. Percentage-wise, that's a small percentage of the budget. And actually, because of some reforms we put into place back in 2009 that a lot of folks have forgotten about, our redemptions this year are going to now drop down near to $500 million. So you're talking about a lesser piece of the pie. But for those who believe that, like Bob Dole and Ronald Reagan and Newt Gingrich did, that low-income housing tax credits are good for building senior housing instead of having the government do it all on its own, we believe that that helps build some beneficial projects for Missourians. It puts Missourians to work. It provides facilities for low-income seniors. When used correctly, those can be beneficial. Same thing with historic tax credits. All that being said, even though we are supportive of those, we did have a significant tax credit reform package that would have created another $100 million in savings every single year for the next 10 years. I think you've seen a lot of attempts to do this in both the House and Senate, and if you could have an up or down vote in both bodies, we would have probably passed these reforms by now. But there's a couple players in our state Senate that feel there needs to be more quote-unquote savings, and so they have simply not been able to have an up or down vote on a House tax credit reform bill to date.
Okay. I want to take a moment to remind our audience that this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Famuliner, and today we're talking to some state lawmakers as we preview the 2014 Missouri legislative session. Joining me in studio, Chris Kelly is a Democratic representative for the state's 45th House District in Boone County. Caleb Rowden is a Republican House member representing the state's 44th District in Boone and Randolph counties. And House Speaker Tim Jones represents the state's 110th District serving St. Louis and Franklin counties. A Republican, he was first elected as Speaker of the House in September 2012. And we'd love to hear from you and our audience as well. Should legislators expand Medicaid this year? Let us know what you think by giving us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet us at intersectkbia. We'd like to remind you that you can watch Intersection as streaming video online during our live conversations every Monday afternoon at 2 at kbia.org. You can watch that video and join our online chat by going to kbia.org and scrolling down to the link for Intersection. Again, that's Mondays at 2 online at kbia.org. And that is a big question we'll get to a little bit later, see if anyone has any specific questions about it. But first, one other thing in the same area we've been talking about is the tax incentives we just passed for Boeing. That obviously that project did not come here, went back to Washington State, the Boeing 777X. But what did we learn from that process as well as far as what might work for tax incentives and I guess just in general for what how are we going to be interacting with corporations like this?
I wasn't here for the vote. I would have voted for it. You guys both, I think, voted for it, didn't you?
Yes, we did.
Nobody liked it, and everybody did what they thought they needed to do to keep us in the game. If you're looking at it from the point of view where we were, there's lots of good criticisms to not do it. But the fact of the matter is when you have an opportunity like that, you probably have to do what you can to keep your state in the contest. And I think that's what happened.
Yeah, I think it was one of those, you know, number one, we're doing it in the scheme, the scope of 5 days. And so to be asked to go through that whole process of offering, you know, $1.7 billion in incentives to a company in 5 days, that's a tough undertaking. A lot of people had a lot of questions, and there were philosophical differences, but then also some other things that we had to work out. You know, I voted for it, and I think it's one of those things that we're in the position that we're in now. It's not going to cost the state anything going forward. You know, some folks that were in opposition to it thought, well, we're just getting played, and I don't know that I have the answer to that question because I'm not inside the, mm-hmm. the inner circle with Boeing. But there was an article that came out, I think, today that the AP put out that said that we were absolutely in the finals. Boeing had come to St. Louis, had one site visit, had two more scheduled, and if that Washington vote had gone differently, boy, I think there's a pretty good chance that we would have been in the top running for that. So I think it was the right thing to do it. You know, I thought it was a good show of leadership. You know, the governor, when he gets behind something, you know, that's what it looks like. And so I would love to see more of that. And I think Speaker Jones and President Pro Tem Dempsey did a good job of trying to navigate the landfills and landmines and get something done, which I thought was good.
Okay. Yeah, why don't we go ahead and move on to that idea of Medicaid expansion. I guess why don't we start with you, Representative Kelly. Is this something that you support, Medicaid expansion? Is something Governor Nixon is pushing very heavily yet again?
I support it completely and unequivocally. The State Chamber of Commerce, Associated Industries, 50 local the Chamber of Commerce in almost every city in the state of Missouri supports it. The Missouri Highway Association, the Missouri Catholic Conference, everybody who runs hospitals and everybody who has a local economy to worry about supports it. Failure to do Medicaid expansion will, for example, cost us $30 million in Boone County if we don't do it. Yeah, it'll cost the state of Missouri hundreds of millions of dollars. And everyone, there's four independent, objective, private sector studies all reaching the same conclusion.
Okay. And then Speaker Jones and Representative Brown. Again, this did not happen last session. One of the big problems Republicans are seeing with this are the fiscal impact over time. What are your views on that, I guess?
Well, we had several bills that I was more than happy to move through the process to have the debate on Medicaid, you know, what to do with it. I think expansion is simply one question you have to ask if you're going to be honest to the taxpayers and honest to the patients. There are many studies out there that show that the Medicaid system is fraught with all sorts of problems, that the outcomes are not good, that the medical care, the current medical care, is not adequate, that there is lots of waste, fraud, and abuse. We all hear these anecdotes. The anecdotes at some point in time pile up so many times, and you hear them so often that I think it's systemic. That being said, Representative Jay Barnes, who is of our party, had a bill last year that he described as a Medicaid transformation bill. It had some expansion in it, but it also had a great deal of reform. It would have required some significant federal waivers, but you've seen, as Obamacare has had great difficulty being implemented and states have struggled with the expansion question, the federal government has gotten more and more willing to hand out exemptions and waivers. So I don't know if Representative Barnes's bill would be awarded a waiver or not, but at least we had the debate. One of our biggest stumbling blocks is the state Senate has not been very willing to have this discussion at all. And, you know, it's hard for me to blame them because they are simply saying, why have the debate on a broken system that is going to, as you properly point out, is one of our arguments, could have long-term negative fiscal impacts. The state of Delaware expanded Medicaid last year, and they were just handed a bill to come up with an additional $25 million. Mm. It's what many of us are saying is going to happen, that there's going to be some great money on the front end, but on the back end, just like the fears of cutting taxes could harm your budget long term, that some say, I don't agree with that. I think with an entitlement, you will have that harm to your budget, because once you go down the road of an entitlement, you're stuck with it. You can't back off of it. And if our federal government continues to pile up debt at over $17 trillion a year and counting, I don't know that they're going to live up to their Medicaid promises as well. So I've been willing to have the Medicaid reform debate, the Medicaid transformation debate. Outright expansion to me is just pumping more money into a broken system. Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't seem likely to you. Just like I said, outright expansion seems like it'd be very difficult to get through.
It's a complete non-starter. I mean, for our state senate, and if it came to a vote on the House floor, I don't think just an outright expansion bill would pass.
Right, but that other approach may. You think there's a chance it works? Maybe
you bring a lot more people to the table when you talk about reform. People are still concerned about the ultimate price tag to the state if we add expansion dollars for able-bodied adults into our system.
Okay. Yeah, I think the speaker hit a couple of good points. One, Jay Barge does some really good work on this, and he gets a lot of praise from everybody on this. And you know, you dive into a philosophical issue like this and really dive in and do it well, he deserves to be commended. You know, I had some issues with it last year. I have some issues with it this year. I'm more than open to the discussion, and I have I've talked to Representative Barnes numerous times, and we have ongoing discussion about what it's going to look like going forward. I think one piece of it that I've talked to Chris about this, talked to Senator Schaefer and some others. One piece of it that I think deserves a part of the discussion is, you know, I'm not sure that federal government's in debt up to its eyeballs. We all understand that. I'm not sure that that's going to keep them from sending the money that they say that they're going to send on the expansion population, because you know that we get a lot of money from the federal government and a lot of other stuff. So, but what could end up being a problem is right now for our existing Medicaid population, it's a 60-40 split for us in Missouri. It's a 50-50 split for Illinois, and that varies a little bit around those numbers around the country. The idea of Obamacare and what it's intended to do is to get all the states to parity, right? So everybody's covering at 138 of the population level, of the poverty level, excuse me. So that's more for us. Our threshold right now is admittedly very low. And so it's more money for us to expend on the front end. But then also, what happens in 8 years from now when everybody's at parity and, Dick Durbin or somebody from Illinois says, well, why are you paying 60% to Missouri, you're only paying 50 to us? And so I think I would fully expect that to happen at some point when we get far enough down this discussion. So if that happens, you know, the chances are the federal government's not going to give 10 more percent to Illinois. They're probably going to take 10% away from us. And if they do that, that's over $2 billion in new Medicaid expenditures on top of the growing. We've grown our Medicaid expenditures by $2 billion in the last 5 years in our state budget. So That's a problem. You know, the sharp upward trajectory of what we're spending on Medicaid as a state right now, Medicaid expansion doesn't do anything to solve that because those are two different populations. So there are some very that's something that needs to be in the discussion. And I think Democrats would be wise to you know, be a part of that discussion and not just say, well, you know, when we resort to Republicans hate the poor and this and that, you know, you lose the dialogue pretty quick. But I think that there is room for an intelligent, thoughtful discussion on what this can look like going forward in Missouri, and I'm more than welcome to have that.
Representative Kelly, we just have a few quick seconds before the break, and we have to finish this up afterward. But
Republicans are precisely correct when they talk about the need for reform. I can promise you that there's almost no reforms that couldn't get done in a bill that did reform and expansion, and I hope that these guys who want reform will say, okay, these are not reform generally, but reform specifically. Get those things and then do our work. The problem that Caleb articulates about the future and 50% versus 60% is true and irrelevant, because that happens whether we expand or not.
Okay. We're going to have to go to a quick break. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking to some state lawmakers as we preview the 2014 Missouri legislative session. Joining me in studio are Chris Kelly, Caleb Browden, and Tim Jones. I'm Ryan Femioner. We'll be right back after a short break. Welcome back to Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Famuliner, and today we're talking to some state lawmakers as we preview the 2014 Missouri legislative session. Joining me in studio, Chris Kelly is a Democratic representative for the state's 45th House District in Boone County. Caleb Broughton is a Republican House member representing the state's 44th District in Boone and Randolph Counties. And Republican House Speaker Tim Jones represents the state's 110th District, serving St. Louis and Franklin Counties. He was first elected as Speaker of the House in September 2012. And we'd love to hear from you and our audience as well. Should legislators make Missouri a right-to-work state this year? Let us know by giving us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet us at intersectkbia. Before we go on to that question, we have had some comments from in our chat room and via email I wanted to bring in here. One is from Jeannie. She said that she just enrolled in healthcare via the healthcare.gov website. She has coverage beginning February 1st. Her other options for healthcare are few, if indeed any exist. And while she agrees that the rollout has been problematic, for what reason is the legislature still trying to undermine the ability of people like me to get health insurance? I work every day, but my employer does not offer me benefits. This is my best option and an option I want to keep. I guess Representative Broughton, Speaker Jones, I think she's saying for people who still may fall in that coverage gap, who maybe, have that ability through healthcare.gov, if they are eligible in that with Medicaid, were expanded. That's her, I think, line of thought there.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think and what I've said all along, what I said last year was, we are admittedly low in some of our thresholds in Missouri. I got no problem admitting that. And there is a coverage gap that exists that I think we need to try and figure out a way to address. I'll be more than happy to say both of those things. With that being said, we have to understand, number one, that the rollout of the larger legislation has been very problematic, has been riddled with a lot of issues. Last year, part of the when we were given our credit rating, we maintained our AAA credit rating. But part of one of the reasons why we could eventually go down is because of the amount of money that we have tied to the federal government as a state. And so, you have to think about this is a big picture discussion. And I don't discount her situation for one second. And I'm grateful that there is a way for her to have coverage, but we're talking about an issue that affects literally every single Missourian. If you're not getting coverage from healthcare.gov, we're talking about your taxpayer dollars. And so there is a much bigger discussion that involves a lot of variables that we have to have, and I think we should have it. I think the working poor of Missouri and those folks that would potentially benefit from this, I think they deserve that discussion, and I think we should have it. And I'm more than welcome to come to the table on that. But it's a much larger issue with a lot of variables that we have to take into account.
For every one Jeannie, and I think that's wonderful that she was able to find a product that fit her lifestyle and her current needs. I've heard from other Jeannies and other Joes and other Janes who have said, because of this rollout, the president's promise of if you like your plan, you can keep it has not become true for them. I know countless business owners that I could sit here and recite the rest of the day who have said our health care premiums have gone up. We're not sure we can continue to provide health insurance for our 10 employees or our 20 employees or our 30 employees. So for every one person that's been able to access through healthcare.gov, all you got to do is look at the statistics. Number one, the enrollments are lagging way behind what the federal government needs them to be at this point in time, and they don't look like they're catching up. The premiums are a lot more expensive than they thought they would be. And for all those people who are on individual insurance plans, we have millions of Americans who have lost coverage. So we're at a net loss right now on January 1 of 2014 of people who have health insurance in this country or who are struggling to retain it. So the one-size-fits-all model of the federal government inserting itself into this area that it probably never belonged in the first place is not working. And Republicans have had plenty of proposals for our health care cost insurance problem over the last several decades. Congressman Ryan has had plan after plan after plan. Speaker Gingrich before him and others before him have talked about the portability of health insurance plans, have talked about ownership of health savings accounts. Something that the big institutions and hospitals have fought us on for decades, transparency in healthcare cost. Why don't we have this crisis in any other insurance model across our country except for healthcare? It's because of the barriers that are put up to this state-by-state employer-provided strange world of health insurance that we're in. We need to put the free market into health care, and I think we can solve a lot of our problems.
Okay. We'll have to move on, but Representative Kelly, anything else you wanted to add on that before we move on? There's lots else to get to. Okay, great. I mentioned earlier right to work. That's another thing that's likely to come up. There was a hearing today, House hearing today about that as well. Representative Jones, I guess, how likely is that, that that's going to come up this year?
Sure,
as well?
I'll start because it's my fault, right? We're having the debate because of me. Well, it really isn't because of me. This debate has been percolating probably since 1978, which is the last time that the people of Missouri voted on it in a global way. And the world has changed quite a bit in 26 years. And I think everyone knows what my position is on what I call worker freedom and choice and has been for the last many years. I've simply decided it's at the point in time where our state needs to have the debate. I don't know how it's going to turn out. I don't know if our state Senate is going to be interested in the issue or not. I do know the majority floor leader in the Senate, Representative Ron Richard, when he was the speaker. He is from a part of the state and represents a constituency which very much wants this to happen. And I know he has spoken very strongly for it. But I don't know that President Pro Tem Dempsey is as excited. So I've decided, well, let's start the debate in the House. We have to look at economic reality. We are surrounded nearly by states that have this option, that have worker freedom and choice. 6 of our 8 bordering states have this dynamic in place. 24 states in the union now have this economic model. If you look at a lot of the statistics and studies, you'll see that the most population growth, job growth, and even increases in wages are in those states that have lower tax burdens and who have worker freedom and choice. I know many feel that there is going to be a lot of bad possibilities that come out of this. I think it's mainly fear. You have states like Oklahoma and Tennessee that are right-to-work states where union membership has actually increased. In Oklahoma, it's been by the tens of thousands. In my home district, I have a 300-acre parking lot, and the unions did not save Chrysler from maintaining its presence in our state. So by being a union shop state, we've lost jobs. I think it's time to try something new.
Representative Kelly, what do you think about its chances, and what are your thoughts on this idea?
It's absolutely certain that adopting right to work will mean that people who work for a living will make less money. That, I think, is a guaranteed certainty. It's happened everywhere. The best educated, the most affluent states are ones that are not right to work states. I believe that this is a way to transfer money from people who go to work every day and work with their hands to people who take their money to Bimini and get tax breaks. I think this is a direct assault on people who work for a living outside in a backhoe versus the guys who sit in Dallas and run construction companies in Missouri. It's a transfer of money from working people to big corporations out of state. It's not going to produce any new money. That's the economic effect. Now, the political effect is such that I think it will never pass.
Why not?
Because the practical reality is that if right to work is on the ballot, fewer Republicans will be elected to the state Senate. I think that is a matter that a Republican state senator said that to me in no uncertain terms. This is on the ballot, we lose seats. And I think that will mean that it will never be on the ballot.
And that's the other approach that could be taken here, right? Because Governor Nixon has said he would veto this. I mean, do you see that as something that may pursue in the House to get this on the ballot rather than passing it through the legislature?
Well, the political reality for Governor Nixon is his largest campaign contributors are big labor unions to the tune of millions of dollars. And if you want to look at who's in the 1%, you need to look no further than union bosses who make, you know, upwards of $400,000 or $500,000. And I think when you're talking about workers, I want more workers in this state. I want more workers earning more wages. And the simple economic fact is we have lost tens of thousands of manufacturing jobs over the last 3 decades. Chrysler is gone from Fenton. Ford is gone from Hazelwood, Missouri. Many of our other small manufacturers have left our state as well. When you look at states that have this worker freedom option, and all you need to look is at the epicenter, the former epicenter of union organization in our country, which was Michigan, and specifically Detroit. You know, being a closed union shop state did nothing to benefit that state. In fact, since they've gone to right to work, they've stopped the bleeding. They've stopped the loss of jobs. They have some opportunity. On the tax front, New York State is offering new businesses that come there tax-free offers for the next 10 years. So states are letting go of the old big government solutions of more taxing, more spending, more union organization, and going to worker freedom and lower taxation. So we can look to the North and the East, where the Rust Belt has essentially failed, or we can look to the South and the West, where population and manufacturing are moving. And I think it's time for Missouri to break the status quo and to say to businesses, we're open. Please come here.
Okay. We'll jump into another topic here, because, again, there's a few other things we want to get to before the show ends here. The transportation sales tax failed last year. 1 cent sales tax statewide it was attempted to pass. It would have gone to a bunch of different infrastructure projects. We have a comment from Dale Roberts here in Columbia. He says he wants to see more road repair. He's been on he's on his fourth windshield in 7 years from driving Highway 63 between Columbia and Jefferson City. He says it shouldn't
of the way he drives.
He says it shouldn't be a partisan issue, though. He says it's a public safety issue. What are the chances for that
us? It's not a partisan issue. None of this capital improvement stuff. This is something where the three of us are in lockstep. I think I voted for the transportation sales tax. I don't know what you guys did on it.
I did.
But the fact of the matter is we could put thousands of people to work in the state of Missouri and repair our infrastructure. And we've got at least two kinds of infrastructure. One, we have highway infrastructure. And two, we have public building infrastructure, the hospital in Fulton, the state capitol, the medical school in Kansas City, economic development opportunities in St. Louis and UMSL. And Tim, the speaker, was the leader on this issue last year. He sponsored a bill that passed the House that would have put literally thousands of people in the state of Missouri to work. The Senate did not take it up. But this is bigger, way bigger than anything the governor has proposed in terms of job development. One of the interesting questions is, should we combine the highway and the non-highway capital improvements, infrastructure bills? And I don't know the answer. I know there's something we ought to talk about.
Okay.
I think one of the issues that the 1 cent sales tax faced in among legislators, and I had discussions with both of these sides, and you know, you have Republicans on the right who would say, you know, that's a big old tax increase and not something that I can put my name on. So you have folks in opposition on that side. And you got folks on the left who say, well, a sales tax increase of that magnitude is quite regressive and not something that they would be able to get behind. So you have some political realities on just raising the sales tax by a penny for a defined period of time that would make that make it challenging for that to pass. You know, what Chris said is reality about if those two things were to be on the ballot at the same time, obviously we have a huge issue because you're asking for Missourians to pony up a lot of money. And so I think we're going to have to get creative on it. I don't see a path forward for the transportation tax. I think the bonding I'm obviously in support of and think that there is less really hard vocal opposition that I've seen anyway to a bonding package as opposed to a 1 cent. So, but it'll be a tough road for either one of them probably.
Okay. We've got John from Columbia on the phone wanting to talk a little bit about the transportation sales tax and infrastructure idea. John, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good afternoon. I am enjoying the dialogue. I have a comment and a couple questions for your panel of the speaker and the two representatives. And they do relate to the initiative for a transportation sales tax. I preface my comments that I do believe we need to put more money, a lot more money, into transportation infrastructure. And I'm not adverse to higher taxes, but I can think of nothing more patently unfair than this proposed sales tax to improve transportation. And by that, I mean the agricultural interests, both corporate and privately owned, are not going to pay a penny toward the sales tax. And the boaters, you go over to the marina and buy a fishing boat, you have to pay sales tax, but those $200,000 luxury yachts on Lake of the Ozarks won't pay a thing. Finally, on trucks, none of the 18-wheelers in interstate commerce will pay a penny toward the sales tax. And just 2 years ago, the legislature exempted all trucks over 54,000 pounds from the sales tax. That means really no heavy truck will pay anything toward the sales tax. So my two questions, if we are going to move forward with this sales tax, would your panel agree that the voters should be at least aware of what special interest groups will be excluded from paying the tax? Or alternatively, would they be willing to put a 54,000-pound weight limit on the trucks traveling our highways during the course of this tax, since they will not be contributing toward the road repairs?
Let me take the first crack at this. John, there is a problem with every single solution to our transportation system. Gas tax, there's a lot of problems with. Toll roads, there's a lot of problems with. Sales tax, everybody acknowledges there's problems. On the other hand, if we don't do something, 70 is going to be a parking lot. We have our highways are right now in the situation where we're hurting our own commerce by allowing our highway system to deteriorate. I agree with, as you know, many of the things you say about the unfairness, but the big picture, we still have to fix our roads.
Yeah, I would say to John, all of his comments go to the crux of the question, which I'm most concerned about: will the voters approve this initiative?
That's right.
I believe that this initiative is given an up or down vote in both the House and the Senate. It will likely pass this year. I personally voted against the measure, but again, I said earlier today that if a majority of the House, especially a strong majority, want to proceed on an issue, I don't believe one person should stop it. The House is not the Senate. So I did let this go last year, and I was correct. A strong majority of the House supported it. My biggest concern, though, is what happens on the ballot. And John's correct. The opponents of this measure are going to say this is an $8 billion tax increase, giving MoDOT an $800 million blank check every year. I believe state government should provide for a good public education, provide a social safety net for the truly poor, and we should build roads and bridges and infrastructure. And I keep asking, you know, and Chris is right, Representative Kelly's right, every option is fraught with peril and problems. Is there a fourth way? You know, I think eventually we need to get to the point as a state where we have a line item in our budget every year of funding directed for MoDOT, because I think roads, bridges, and infrastructure is something state government should absolutely support. We may have to cut out some other programs, but moving commerce through our state should be one of our top priorities.
Okay. Thanks very much for your call, John. I'm actually going to bring on another caller. Thank you. So the next call, actually, Dale Roberts called in as well, who apparently many of you know. Dale, are you there?
I'm here.
All right. I hope you didn't hear them talking smack on you earlier. But what do you want to talk about today?
I deserve it. And I'm glad those folks are willing to come on and answer tough questions. I always respect that. When you were talking about saving money for the state and looking at the budget and those related issues, I don't know. I know there's a committee on fraud, waste, and abuse. I don't know if there's one looking at efficiency. But, for example, maybe 4 years ago, the governor eliminated all the law enforcement officers at alcohol and tobacco control, basically gutted the agency. But they still have a director who makes $80,000, $90,000 a year plus $50,000 in benefits to supervise maybe 10 people. And that's just one example. Is there anybody looking at efficiency issues?
Yeah, there's a lot of people looking at efficiency issues. And I, as you know, opposed the removal or the transfer of the authority for the alcohol or the inspectors that you talked about to the municipalities. But he's still got to look at what the municipalities are doing. But your point is a good one.
Yeah, and I know too, Paul Kirtman's committee that he chairs, went around the state and did some hearings, but then also he's done a lot of his own work. And I think the main motivation there is to find redundancy, inefficiency in government, and try to eliminate some of that. And I think he's got a website set up that if I was a good friend, I'd know the URL of. But and he's really aimed at that, and I think he's done some good work. It's not bomb throwing type stuff, but it's just, look, we're wasting some money here, and maybe we shouldn't be wasting money here, and let's do something about it. So there are a lot of people that are interested in that, I think.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for the call. Dale, I want to remind our listeners that this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Femioner, and today we're talking to some state lawmakers as we preview the 2014 Missouri legislative session. Joining me in studio, Chris Kelly is a Democratic representative for the state's 45th House District in Boone County. Caleb Browden is a Republican House member representing the state's 44th District in Boone and Randolph Counties. And Republican House Speaker Tim Jones represents the state's 110th District serving St. Louis and Franklin Counties. He was first elected as Speaker of the House in September 2012. And we'd love to hear from you and our audience as well. What do you think should be a priority for legislators this year? Let us know by giving us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet us at intersectkbia. And I'll bring in another comment here we have from Irene. Or
Ryan, let
Chris
me make
Kelly,
a
want to
point.
Jump in something
on,
real quick? Sure,
on
go ahead.
On the capital improvement stuff, people here should remember that Speaker Jones was the leader in the effort to adopt the bond issue, which, if passed, would have built the new engineering school on the University of Missouri campus. So I appreciate Tim's work on that. It was very important for Columbia, Missouri.
And that was that was the result of a committee comprised of legislators from all over the state of Missouri. Mid-Missouri was well represented, but so was Kansas City, St. Louis, mm-hmm. Southwest, Southeast Missouri, Northeast Missouri. And Chris, Representative Kelly and I were presented with a lot of creative problems that we had to come up with creative mm-hmm. solutions for. So we have a host of infrastructure needs around our state. And with the failure of the federal government to provide us a highway bill or really any other kind of infrastructure assistance, we've had to look inwards at ourselves. And we've had to look at our AAA bond rating, the fact that we just paid off the last series of bonds. Missouri is a low-debt state. We balance our budget. And we said, you know, this is a proper use of our time in the legislature and our legislative resources. And we had identified project areas all across the state of Missouri that I will say when the Senate hopefully acts on our bonding bill this year, we will immediately put Missourians to work all across our state and fix some serious infrastructure problems that have gone unrealized for a couple decades now.
I'm going to go ahead and bring in another comment from Irene from our chat room. She says, Missouri's General Assembly is an embarrassment to the citizens of this great state. It was bad in the 80s, but now the process is truly broken. The unwillingness to address campaign finance reform will only continue to make it more difficult to fix what's truly wrong in Missouri. So she says that she thinks that she has three suggestions about campaign finance reform. She says, address contribution limits. There should be absolutely no PAC to PAC contributions or PAC to individual contributions. Basically, she's saying that you should not be hiding where the money comes from. Any reactions to that and what kind of ethics reform we may be looking at this session?
Well, I totally agree in one piece of that if however money is getting to a political candidate, the public should know about it, period. That's definitely something that we need to make sure is happening in the state. You know, as far as campaign finance caps go, in my view, there's a couple of issues. One, you know, you can make a pretty good argument that it's a First Amendment sort of argument where, you know, this is anyone's right to free speech, and this is how they're playing that out. Number two, money's going to get there. Now, you can make arguments against that, but at the end of the day, I firmly believe that if folks want money to get to a political candidate, regardless of what, you know, limits and pack to pack and committee to committee, whatever that looks like, I think it's still going to get there. And so I think the best thing that we can do at this point in our state is to make sure that the money that's getting from point A to point B, that anyone in the public can get online or get wherever they need to get and know where that's coming from. I think the transparency and accountability piece of that is of equal or more importance than anything we could do on the cap side. I have an ethics reform bill that I filed that deals with some other things on the other side with lobbyist gifts and a revolving door for legislators to lobbyists. And I know the speaker has co-sponsored another ethics bill. And so I think there's some holes that we need to fill. I don't necessarily agree with Irene on her thoughts, but I think there are some holes in Missouri that we need to address.
Representative Kelly, what do you think about
this? Well, Irene says that the legislature was an embarrassment in the 80s and it is an embarrassment now.
What's the common denominator?
That's a common denominator.
It's me.
And they're rid of you next year anyway. So
denominator. Look, in the 80s, I sponsored Missouri and passed Missouri's first public disclosure bill. I think that we should have finance limits. I think the amount of money we're spending on campaigns is obscene, and the people passed it, but the legislature repealed it. I think it was a mistake, and I hope that we will reinstate limits.
Okay.
My thought on this is, and I'll side with my good old friend Senator Tim Green, Democratic state senator from St. Louis County, who was unapologetic in his defense of allowing anyone to write whatever check they wanted to whatever politician they wanted to support. And he and I, different sides of the political aisle, agreed it is an expression of free speech. And the Supreme Court has issued a couple rulings in line with that. Here's what I would say. Unless you're going to prohibit all money, government money, public money, private money, from politics, like Representative Rowden said, it's going to find its way in. When we prohibited alcohol in this country for a few years back in the – I don't know. You were around, right? Guess what? Alcohol was here in the United States, you know, and I think when you're talking about something like that, you know, alcohol is a powerful tool. It has to be used very carefully. Money's a powerful tool and has to be used carefully too. Transparency is what we need to have in the process. Otherwise, you're inviting people to figure out how to game the system. But if you have full transparency and accountability in politics, then as Representative Rowden points out, you're going to be able to identify who supports who and for how much.
Well, there were a lot of other things we wanted to get to. We only have about a minute left in the show, so I guess what else should we be looking for? I guess just some quick hits of what else we're going to be talking about this session.
You know, I want to go back to I didn't answer the question about Boeing, and I just want to say
sure.
I'm just going to wrap that into one nutshell. You saw a functional government that week. You saw a government take – you saw your state government take a big, huge problem and come up with a solution, and that was because of two things. Governor Nixon, for the first time, in my opinion, in over 5 years, came to the legislature – presented the problem, and also said what he needed and came up with a solution and worked with us. And then you saw bipartisan agreement in the House and the Senate come up with a solution to say Missouri is open for business. I think there's a number of issues we can come together upon and say that we are again open for business, and here's the legislative vehicles that will help us provide more jobs and more opportunity and growth for Missouri.
Okay. Representative Kelly, what else are you looking for?
I'm going to file a bill to repeal term limits. I think during my time I've seen both term limits before we had them and after we have them. I think the people now are every bit as smart and hardworking as they were in the bad old days. They just don't have enough time to learn the complexities of state government, and they're maybe too tied up in advancement.
Okay. Killer Browden, you get 10 seconds.
working on bringing some stuff to Mizzou. There's a 50-50 state match program that they're working on, get some new money on campus. We're going to try to get that done.
Okay. That's all the time we have for today's Intersection. Thanks to our guests, Democratic House Representative Chris Kelly, Republican Representative Caleb Rowden, and Republican House Speaker Tim Jones. We'd like to remind those of you enjoying this rebroadcast that Intersection takes place live for a full hour from 2 to 3 every Monday afternoon. You can watch live streaming video of our program each Monday afternoon online at kbia.org. Intersection is produced by Raymond Tongakar, Janet Saidi, and Ruben Stern. Travis McMillan is our technical director with production assistance from Caleb Hoke and Casey Morell. Pat Akers is our audio producer. Executive directors are Mike Dunn and Mike McKean. And I'm Ryan Famuliner. Thanks for joining us today, and have a great week.